This episode of the Webcomic Beacon is brought to you by the Rampage Network, namely one of its members, Astray 3, found at astray3.com. That is the number 3. Emily is in need of reevaluating her life and figuring out what exactly she wants to get out of it, but she might be getting more than she bargained for. One minute she's hiding from her angry boss, and the next she's in some strange world surrounded by fantastic creatures, and she has no idea what's going on except she knows she has to get out of there. Follow Emily along her journeys and see if she gets where she needs to be. Check it out at astray3.com.
Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello and welcome to episode 195. 95 of the Webcomic Beacon podcast here at webcastbeacon.com. If you are still listening to this on the old website, please go to webcastbeacon.com and pick up the new RSS feeds and, of course, new links. iTunes links are coming soon. This is the Webcomic Beacon. I'm Fess of PSIWebcomic.com. I am not joined by Mark or Tanya at the moment. Mark is still moving, and Tanya might come in later, so we'll just sneak her right on in. And the Webcast Beacon Network is, of course, hosted on the Rampage Network at rampagenetwork.com. And with us this week, well, the topic is going to be watercoloring. And we have three guests with us this week. We have Bugbite of the webcomic Messenger at messenger-comic.com. Welcome to the show.
Hey. How's it going?
Going just fine right here. Sunday morning. We also have Root from the Dawn Chapel at dawnchapel.com. Welcome.
Good morning. It's so great to be on the Webcomics Bacon. Because I love bacon. Fatty's got to eat.
Beacon. No, beacon. Like, boop, boop.
I'm just going to choose to believe that you did not say that.
And we also have Jillyfu of the planet closest to heaven, as well as Demon Eater at demoneater.com. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Pleasure to be here, Fess.
Awesome. Now, let's see here. I think we've had Jill on the show before.
yes.
But we're gonna start with Bugbite here, or Bug, with her comic Messenger. So I would like you to tell us about what Messenger is.
Okay. I guess the short version would be it's a post-apocalyptic style story. It's kind of sci-fi, fantasy, somewhere in between. It takes place on Earth in the future, but you don't really know when. And there's all these kind of groups that are either warring with each other or, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And there's kind of multiple timelines of things going on in the past and like genetically engineered creatures and humans and just sci-fi nonsense.
Okay.
Basically.
So you have, you said you had different timelines going. So you have like in the past or the future, like a story going on as well as the so-called present or whatever? Or?
Yeah, essentially, like, everything's kind of interconnected by, like, basically ghosts, and they are the messengers, and that's where the title comes from, I guess. And they interact with people in the present, which is actually the future, if that makes any sense. And so, you know, they're from the past, and their backstories take place in our present, like, right now, or, you know, slightly ahead of now. And I don't know. It's time travel nonsense, which is fun, and I don't know. It's confusing, but...
Is there actual time travel elements in it, or is it just story-wise?
It's just story-wise, basically, but, okay. You know, it reveals itself that way, sort of, I guess. I don't know.
Alrighty. And of course we have Root from the Dawn Chapel. Would you like to tell us about what the Dawn Chapel is all about?
It's a series of short stories. Half of them are like folk tales, and some of them are just goofy stories that I made up as I was going along. And then kind of halfway into the run, I started doing single-page gags, a couple of those in between the larger stories. And right now it's not updating because I'm in the middle of a convention marathon, and I will resume.
Oh, right.
Hopefully sometime in June or July.
So it's a collection of short stories, though, but do you have any repeating characters sets?
Not yet. I did do, like, there was one gag that turned out to be, like, crazy popular on Stumble Upon that was like these two chickadees talking about Michael Bublé and getting earwormed. And I did reprise them. And I'm kind of hoping, like, I did a bunch called the Apex Predator versus a series of mundane objects, and we'll probably do a few more of those sometime in the future. There's a larger story. Like, the reason why I took a break is partially because I have a bunch of conventions that I'm doing. I did Califer and Fanime earlier this month, and I'll be doing WesterCon on the July 4th weekend here in San Jose. But I'm also supposed to be writing a book, which is going to be the next story, but it's going to be in somewhere in the 90 to 120 page range. And then from that point forward, I'm planning on not necessarily ditching the short story format, but rather than having short stories that have no connection to each other, the short stories will be presented, as kind of like the play within a play meta narrative, where, you know, one character might say to another, "Well, did you hear the story about such and such?" And then if I want to do a short story, that would be the segue into it. But it would be presented in the framework of this larger story universe that I would like to build.
Cool. And yeah, of course, convention season's kind of upon us right now, so that cuts into a lot of people's
time. Yeah, it's
a
learning experience. Like, I did furry cons. I'm prior to this year, like the only convention that I've ever done is Further Confusion, which is the big West Coast furry con. And we always do so well that I thought, let's make more money and do more cons. And I'm learning that that was a bad idea because we did so terribly at the last couple of cons. So after this, we'll probably dial it back.
Well, you know, depending on the type of thing that you're selling, certain cons might do better than others, of course.
Well, Fanime was great. I didn't make much money at Fanime because, like, anime people don't have, I guess, the same, commission-based culture that the furry crowd does. Like, at furry cons, like, my big cash cow are, like, con badges, which is something that doesn't really exist outside of the furry crowd, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, the anime, like, crowds tend to be, can you draw an anime character that already exists that's not your character, and then I'll buy it.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was, I had two commissions for the 4-day weekend of Fanime, and most of what I sold were prints, but they were not prints of anime fan art, which I had drawn a whole bunch of, thinking that that's what I would sell. They were prints of my own comic, which was very gratifying. The Fanime congoers, especially people in the dealer's den, the artist alley, they love webcomics. There was so much Homestuck cosplay there, I couldn't believe it.
I don't think I've ever seen Homestuck cosplay yet.
Oh, you're totally lying. It was all over the place at Anime Detour,
really?
Remember?
Maybe I didn't pay attention.
The trolls, the gray people, those, they were right behind
us. Yeah, anything with the orange horns.
Oh, yep, the... what do they call it? Candy corn horns.
Huh. All right. I wasn't paying attention then, obviously. And anyway, so that's Jilly Foo here from her comic Demon Eater, which is the one we're going to be talking about, because that one's in watercolor. Right, the other one's just black and white, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Planet Close to Heaven, it's kind of more of a manga-ish style. But then, okay, Demon Eater, I draw it out in watercolor, and should I explain what it's about?
Well, yeah, tell us about Demon Eater.
All right. It is about a little demon trying to survive in a dog-eat-dog world of cannibals, and the current story arc, he's taken on some... the demons, they, like, change shapes and stuff. They're kind of more like aliens, but demon just sounds so much cooler. So they're pretty much, like, on another world studying humans. And their world is so savage and stuff, and they're just fascinated with how organized and safe the human world appears to be. So they're trying to be like humans. Yeah, and that's the current what's going on. All right.
Well, we're going to talk about styles, like how you guys go about creating watercolors. But I think we'll go go ahead with style and help people how you do it. Jilly Foo, can you go over your basic process for making a page of Demon Eater?
All right, a basic process for making Demon Eater. I don't really use fancy paper. I used to use computer paper. Now I'm using kind of more the cardstock style stuff used for scrapbooking. And pretty much I draw it out in pencil, and I actually ink it with ballpoint, black ballpoint pen, because I figure ballpoint pen is a lot more waterproof than what some special pens, you know, say they're waterproof, and then I get bleed. So I ink it over that, erase all the pencil, and then I pretty much just, and I also cover up with charcoal and stuff to give it a textured feel. And then I don't really use the really fancy style or the really, you know, the really good, you know, thing with watercolor where you blend in and do a lot of the really cool stuff. I just kind of color it in. And I kind of use more the charcoal for shading more than anything. And then pretty much I might do some special effects over. I use acrylic for blood splatter. So I'll just take a toothbrush, fill it with paint, and then splatter it around for effect. And that's kind of the gist of it.
Do you, I just forgot my question. Do you leave room for the word balloons? Do you draw out the word balloons, or is that all in post?
I used to do some on the computer, and then it was just too bothersome. So I switched over, and I draw out the word bubbles, very similar to how I did my other comic before. I used to fill it in the computer, but now I fill it in with black acrylic paint, and it takes overnight to dry. That's the only bad thing about it. And then I use white ink, and I just kind of draw around it. The word bubbles are black because the characters speak psychically with each other. They don't speak in actual words. So when they make sounds and stuff, then I actually put the typical white word bubble.
Alrighty. And, okay. Yeah, I see that now. Alrighty. Well, awesome. And yeah, you've actually been over to my place a couple of times, so I actually got to see your process.
The best thing about it, I can make so many pages. Usually what I tend to do too is I do this to save time. I would make maybe about 15 pages all drawn out, and I simplify a lot of the characters. Like Nike, he's all green, so I just fill him in with green. Vinci, he's all red, so I just fill him all in with red. So I kind of go all, you know, red, all the things that need to be red all across the board, every single page. Then everything that needs to be gray, you know, mostly main character Siderno, color him gray. So that really saves time. I always paint many pages at once, not one page at a time.
Suppose it's easier to get color consistency across all the pages then.
That too.
All right. Root, how about you tell us about your typical process for making a page of the Dawn Chapel?
Oh, man. I'm not sure I have a typical process. I kind of mix it up every time I start a new story or do a new one. Because the comic project itself was like I kind of just started it to teach myself how to do comics and mm-hmm. how to tell stories. And so there's like a lot of experimentation, but I've kind of settled on a working method that like I'm not sure I'm real thrilled with it, but it works for producing consistent images. But I'll tell you what I did for some of the different things. Generally, I start in. Let me back up. Wow, I'm not prepared for this. Okay, I do all my penciling in digitally. Manga Studio, Debut 4. Got it for $25, and it's been a godsend. I don't think I'd be able to do comics without it because, like, figuring out how to do like layout panels on a page is really handy. And I recommend it for everyone for anything. I use a big old Wacom Intuos 9x12, and I do all my penciling and sketching and layout and kind of like dialogue planning and page arranging digitally, because being able to like select stuff and scale it and zoom in real close is really, really handy when I'm planning stuff. I'll do all of my penciling digitally, and then when I've got the page like ready to be finished or laid out to where to a point that I'm satisfied in, I will export it to a PSD, bring it into Photoshop, convert it to CMYK, and kind of flatten everything down so that it's all on, like the panels, the panel borders, and the pencils are all in on one layer. Delete all of the channels except for cyan. And then drop that down to like 25%, so it's just this really, really pale blue, and then print that directly onto watercolor paper. I have a watercolor paper that I sorry, I'm getting away from the microphone to look at the paper that I use. 1 minute.
So all right.
I have a paper that I really, really like. It's called Hanamule Fine Art Watercolor Paper. It's like watercolor paper that's designed for inkjet printers. And because it's designed for inkjet printers, you can't paint on it because it has a coating that's meant to prevent inkjet ink from spreading.
Right.
So I will print on the backside, which is not coated, which means that like once you get it wet, the ink that I've printed with just kind of disappears, which is perfect because nobody can see the pencil lines; they just kind of go away. But it reacts like watercolor paper ought to. Sometimes, though, for some of them, like the puppy who would be Pope, that was done on this block of like Fabriano watercolor paper that was given to me by Candy DeWalt, who does the webcomic Vinci and Artie. She lives like 20 minutes away, so we hang out a lot. And she's a teacher and just has this gigantic like pile of art supplies, and one day I went over to her house and she was like, I need to get rid of this stuff, just pick through it and take anything that you want. So I wound up with a block of like 100 sheets of 8x12 watercolor paper that I need to get rid of and chew through as quickly as possible, and I still have about a quarter of it left. I will print it in the blue lines directly onto the watercolor paper, and then I'll ink it using I use a couple of brush pens that I got from Jet Pens. One of them is
I love Jet Pens.
Yeah, Jet Pens is like it's like my version of TV Tropes. I'll just disappear for hours when shopping. Let me bring up my wish list so I can tell you exactly what I'm using.
I just actually bought several new brushes to try out. Typically, I use the disposable Zebra brush pens.
Yeah, the disposable brushes are fun. a brush that I lean on a lot is the, and like a little, I'm finding that like a lot of my friends who do like brush inking kind of do the same thing, is the Pentel, is it Pentel? The Pentel Pocket, which is waterproof and it produces a really nice line. The Kuretake number 8 is one that I use a lot. So I'll do all of like my silhouette outlines, like I'll do the whole silhouette of the figures with the Kuretake number 8 because it's kind of a heavier line. And then I'll go in on the insides of the silhouettes with Pentel Pocket and like do the fine lines with that. Let that dry, soak it in a tub once it's dried, and then like stretch it onto a board, like staple it and use gum tape so that it, when once it dries, it lays flat, which makes it easier to scan.
Okay.
And then, say again?
No, I said okay.
I don't know. Are you familiar? Are you guys familiar with Blotch? They are a pair of artists that work under one name that are kind of, they're in the furry crowd. They're like the biggest name in furry art.
Which one?
They do a lot of Red Rocket stuff. Blotch, BLOTCH.
No, I've not heard of them.
And I will warn anybody that's listening, if you go Googling that name, you're going to find stuff that you might not want to find. But from a technical standpoint, the Ken Kid, the watercolorist half of Blotch, they're just astounding work. And they did a workshop at Further Confusion a couple of months ago where they demonstrated their how to stretch watercolor paper, and I've kind of been using that method ever since, which is really good. It's you soak in a tub, lay it onto some MDF, and tape down the edges with gum tape, and then while it's still wet, get in there with a staple gun and like staple all of the around the edges, like about an inch and a half intervals through the tape, through the paper onto the board. Let that dry, and then because like the paper fibers expand when they're wet, but they contract when they're dry. If you staple them down and tape them down while they're wet,
mm-hmm.
As it dries, it stretches the paper, and it means that your paper does not warp and puddle quite so much when you're actually painting it. This works better on the hand mule than it does for the Fabriano, though. The Fabriano likes to warp anyway, but once it dries, it's flat again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will go in with... I use... What kind of paints do I use? Let me get them out.
Do you use the tube kind, or do you use like the cheap children's watercolor paint?
Oh, I use tubes. I use the ridiculously expensive tubes. Holbein is the brand that I use, and I have. And if you guys are listening out there in Radioland, and you're concerned about wasting your tubes, the tube paints will reactivate after they're dried. So what I do with the tubes is I've got my watercolor palette. I'll squeeze out into the wells of my watercolor palette all the colors that I want to use. Let it sit out overnight so that the paint that I've squeezed into the wells kind of hardens, and then you've got your own. You know, it's like the Crayola watercolor set that you used when you were a kid. You don't have to throw them out when they're dry. In fact, I prefer working with them after they've set up and hardened.
Oh, that's the name watercolor.
What's that?
That's the name watercolor activates by water.
Yeah, yeah. I had the conversation with my mom, who's also an artist, and also with Candy, that they'll get their tube watercolors, squeeze it out onto the palette, and use make their painting, and then they've got this wet, this wet tube pigment from the tube out, and they don't know what to do with it, and so they'll just rinse it off. And I was like, no, that's not how you're supposed to use it. You just let it dry and keep using it until you're out. I'll go in with like ultramarine and do kind of like lay in my shadows with an underpainting, or I might do like an ultramarine and burnt umber, kind of mix them together to create a gray and establish like all the tonal relationships. Let that dry, then go in and kind of lay my surface colors on top of that. And that is my technique.
Well, cool. Yeah, that's a lot of detail. I'll probably end up looking at all the pens you just mentioned and take a look.
Yeah, I can link them in chat if you want to put them in the show notes.
Okay, sounds good to me. Well, the Skype chat, I can't save the Ustream chat.
Okay.
Hang on. Let's see. Bug, how's it going?
It's going.
Well, alrighty. We actually got to take a quick break right here because I have to switch my recording files over to some more time. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to hear about Bug's method.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, and we're back. So, Bug, please tell us how you typically make your comic.
Okay. Well, it's a whole lot less technical. I never really went into it planning, you know, this is going to be a comic made in watercolor. It was just kind of an experiment. Like, I wanted to use, you know, paint and marker and real media and whatever, just basically whatever I could get my hands on. And it eventually evolved into using primarily watercolor just because it worked out so well. So I just start with a really, really quick, like, 2-minute sketch. Like, it's just stick, people, pencil, whatever. Lay it all down. I go over it in ink. Depends on, you know, how much detail I want to pull out. Sometimes I use a brush and just liquid ink and just brush over it. Or alternatively, like, I have a set of just cheap black ballpoint, like, gel pens and regular pens and... you know, stuff like that. It's just whatever I end up with, I use it. I don't care what it is. sometimes it bleeds, sometimes it doesn't. Usually, like, I'll ink it and let it sit for a couple of hours just to make sure it's not gonna bleed when I start putting watercolor over it. Coloring, typically, I'll just go over it in layers, like, just do a thin, like, you know, these are the main colors for the page, and then just kind of work my way down to, like, intensify the details. And I guess paint-wise, I'm not too picky. I have a box of a bunch of tube watercolors that I bought while I was in school. And then, like, a ton of really cheap, like, kids' watercolor paint. A, because it's cheap and I'm broke. And B, because when you scan it, and kind of tweak the colors in Photoshop and, like, apply the awesome filter over it. They kind of...
I do the exact same thing. There's nothing wrong with deep children's watercolors. I got...
They're, like, super neon. You know, like, they just turn this really, really bright, eye-blinding, you know, stab-your-eyes-out, super bright neon colors, and I just really love that. So, yeah, basically then Photoshop is just, like, tweaking, like, clean up the edges and... Occasionally, I've been known to, you know, adjust a whole area or repaint over it. And I don't really care that it's not completely paint or digital or anything. It just, you know, if I wind up with a comic in the end, I'm happy, I guess. I don't know. I'm not super picky, and it just, it is what it is.
Well, already. Awesome filter. Let me see here. I guess I expected that to go longer, but all right. I'm also looking at the pens that that Root has been linking. I was like, ooh, pens.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. I think I just, like, rattled you down into the Jet Pens pit of despair.
I want to see if they have an affiliates program since mentioned them enough.
You
times.
Know, I was looking for the same thing, like, because I recommend them to so many people that I should be getting kickbacks.
Yeah. Well, I'll send an email and I'll see, and I'll put a link on the site.
I forgot to mention, I do draw my panels digitally by the computer. Do you do that too, Bug?
Not really, actually. I kind of freehand over them, just with a brush, typically, because it's a thicker line and, you know, it works out better.
So, Jilly, when you say you draw digitally, like, how do you get them onto the paper? Like, what is your approach for that?
Well, the panels, since the whole story with Demon Eater is a big flashback, because the narrator is talking about his past, it's all the panels are black. What do they call the in-between the panels? The little lines in between, what do they call those things? Panels.
The margins?
Margins, yeah, they're all
yeah, there you
black.
Go.
Copy manga, of course. And so pretty much what I do is I use that thing in Photoshop that makes straight lines.
The awesome filter?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I don't know the exact jargon, but I pretty much just make the straight, you know, select a square and then just fill it in with, paint, black paint fill or something. You know, real easy.
Okay, so you'll draw it on paper and then you'll drop in your gutters digitally.
Yeah, I do somewhat draw, like maybe I'll pencil in where I'm going to have my panels, but I don't actually, do the inking thing. I just kind of set up everything. I'm so used from, I had, you know, of course, the manga comic I did before Demon Eater. I was used to doing, you know, drawing my own panels. So it wasn't, I never really needed any manga or a program to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta bring up since we're talking about these brushes again. like I've been saying, for like my comic, I use the Zebra disposable brushes, and I've also tried some of the Pentel ones, where. The Zebra ones are a little bit more firmer of a brush tip, so I don't know if that makes it like a felt brush tip versus more like hairs, where it's more wispy. These are firmer; they're not wispy.
They will call them brush pens on jet pens, but some of them are like fiber tipped, like they're actual brushes, which are the two that I linked to, the Kuretake and the Pentel Pocket,
right,
are actual brushes. You know, the ink is fed by capillary action. But there are also a number of pens that use kind of this squishy, rubbery tip that they call it elastomer on the site, which is also a lot of fun. I have a couple of pens like that too. Either of them are really neat for producing like varied, like modulated lines. Mm-hmm. They're like here in the West, we have brush pens like the Pitt, I think the Faber-Castell Pitt pens, mm-hmm. And the Copic multiliners have a brush tip that they call a brush tip.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like felt, just shaped felt that fray so quickly, and it's just so aggravating. Like, why would you do that? Why would you call it a brush? It's not a brush. It's just disappointment. Like compressed felt disappointment.
Yeah, I can't stand those. They don't have the same quality as using an actual brush. It's just terrible. I really hate them.
I will say though that the most popular comic I did, which was like the Firefox's crashed gag that kind of got rehosted and like reposted everywhere on the internet. That was done with I inked that with a sepia tone Copic multiliner brush pen.
Okay.
And I was using the Pitt pens for a while, like the one I did about the guy that had like the alien symbiote like stuck to his gut, that was like a metaphor for bitterness. That was done with the Faber-Castell Pitt pens. Because like for a while I really, really wanted to do all of my line work with like a brown ink, or like a sepia colored ink because I just thought, you know, I just think that having a colored line work is more visually interesting. It's just warmer. But I can't find that waterproof ink for like the fiber brush pens.
You can get dip ink. You know, the kind that you dip your pen in, and then you can get that in brown. I actually have some right in front of me, and I'm sure it's waterproof.
I've seen that. So many different kinds of brown ink, like brown dip ink. I've got I've tried everything, and like I've got walnut ink, and I've got acrylic ink that's put out by, I'm not going to remember any of the brands now that I have to remember them, but I will remember them like right after the show.
Yeah.
All kinds of brown inks. The problem, though, is that the dip pen inks are meant for dip pens. I have...
Like, we're talking about like those metal...
The Kuretake that will let me like fill my brush with the brown ink, but the way it's formulated will ruin the brush like within a month of using it that way.
So you're talking about like the fountain pens with like the metal pointed tip and everything, right?
Yep. Those kind of things. Also,
they're fountain pens. They're nibs that you put into a nib holder, dip it into the well, and draw with it.
Yeah. Another thing I'm curious, I was looking for them, but I don't know if I'll be able to ever find them. Ballpoint pens that are brown inked, but I think you'd probably be totally against the ballpoint pen stuff like that.
I almost wonder if you could go with like a gel pen, you know, because they make so many colors of those. And if you let them dry, like if you let them sit overnight or so, sort of stick better. So, you know, at least you'd get the color options there. They're not the greatest thing to use. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
It'd be fun to experiment with.
Yeah. I when I first saw Jill, like, what are you using a ballpoint pen for? No, I wanted to go back to the fountain pens because Tanya would, if she was here, she'd mention this. She'll have like a panel or a lecture at cons sometimes about using shish kebab sticks, which you get at like 50 for like a couple of bucks, you know, wooden sticks, and use that instead of like a fountain pen to do inking. I think she uses the pointy stick method is, I think it was what she calls it, for lettering. I mean, if you got a bottle of ink, go down to the store, spend a couple of bucks on some shish kebab skewers, and I suppose you could try that out.
You'd have to keep dipping it over and over again really quickly, I think.
Well, I've not seen her panel, so I'm not sure how they work, but she swears by it. So, like I said, she uses it for lettering, though. So, but I'm not sure how well it would work for like for how long you can continuously draw with them, as for like character lines. But I wanted to throw that in there because she would totally say that if she were here.
Yeah, I have played around with, you know, breaking a ballpoint pen and then using the shish kebab thing to spread around the, you know, the really thick ink that's inside a ballpoint pen.
Oh.
But that was more playing around than anything.
isn't it always? Especially in high school, sitting around, what are you going to do? You're going to putz around and end up breaking your pen, get ink all over your hands, or maybe that was just me. Actually, one time I had super glue in my pocket and I was messing with it, and it apparently burst. And then my hand was stuck to my inside of my pocket.
Oh, no, you do not mess with super glue.
I had to go to the office and everything. Anyway, let's see here. I've attempted watercoloring a couple of times, one time in my comic because a character left the dimension or whatever, so I wanted a different feel to it, and looking at all the scans, it's like, you know what, I think I treated my watercolors like opaques.
I was there when you were, you know, doing the watercolor. You just didn't have confidence. The thing is with watercolor is you gotta let go of the control, like acrylic, you know, or of course Photoshop. Like total control, a lot of control. But the thing is with watercolor, you gotta let, it's okay if mistakes are made and thing. That's what
that's
you
half the fun.
Yeah. You know, what do they call that? Happy
accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what my...
It's actually a big reason why I use watercolor. Just because it's so, like, you have to own your mistakes.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, you screw stuff up and maybe it turns out and
works
in your favor.
I use the lift technique where I wet it and I lift the color up so I can repaint it. Of course, then I get ratty paper after that because I'm impatient. But
yeah, it kind of makes the if you try too hard to fix your mistakes, it turns the whole thing into mud.
Really?
Just getting my first watercolor instructor liked to say that a good watercolor is like a good golf game. You need to get to the finish with as few strokes as possible.
Oh.
Which might also be an inappropriate metaphor for masturbation.
Oh, I was wondering if this show was going to go without a lewd comment for a while, but awesome. All right, because Tanya's not here.
You're welcome. That happened.
So we have... Oh, the other...
Always happy to class up somebody's podcast.
Well, normally we talk about boobs, but...
Boobs.
No, I was like I said, I was treating them like opaques because I'm looking at the scans. It's like you couldn't tell that I was using watercolor because it's such a thick color. And one of the things that has been told to me is less is more when it comes to watercolor. Of course, it depends on, you know, the look you're going for too, I'm sure. But out of the three comics that three people that we have on the show with their comics, I think the Don Chapel has a lot more of like the very very good use of the lighter aspects of watercolor. All three have different styles.
Before you go too far in that direction, I need to tell you that my scanner is horrible, and a lot of the state of my watercolor just it does not show up after it's scanned, because like there's if my scanner sees something that is kind of a light color, but it is too far out of the gamut for it to recognize, it'll just turn it into like this pale blue. Regardless of what the color is.
Huh.
And this is... You guys, Bug and Jelly, you probably experience the same problem. Is that you,
yeah.
Not so
no
much,
matter,
actually.
You know, how many...
yeah,
how hard you try to get the perfect scan, your watercolor just turns to garbage after it's been scanned.
Yeah, I have a new scanner that thinks it wants to auto-adjust everything, you know, so that... I really hate that, and... I sometimes make the gray a little bit too light, and I feel that I have to use to really get that grainy stuff of my older pages. A lot of people saying my style really changed, or it's a lot more lighter. It's because I did get a new scanner, and it did lighten everything because it kept on auto adjusting the whites and things like that. I feel now I've been trying to use a lot more charcoal to give it more of the grainy texture. Was what I was going for.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't run into that so much. Like, I think I've learned to kind of abuse what I'm doing on the paper beforehand. Like, I use a lot more blue than I think I need to. And it looks crazy on paper. Like, you know, this is really, really blue. But then when you scan it kind of compensates. And also...
Yeah, I'm learning that I push everything darker just to get it to show up.
Well, I mean, the other thing is I find that, you know, you really do have to go in and adjust the heck out of it once you get it scanned in. You know, I mean, I play around with it for quite a while to get it looking the way I want to, just, you know, levels and color balance and all that. But,
well,
you can't just run it straight through the scanner, I think, and have it come out correctly.
Like, well, no.
A lot of people, I find, they blame scanners, and I don't know. I think it's not this instant fix. You really just have to really, really play with it to get what you want out of it.
Oh. Right. Another thing about traditional art, you know, all three of us do. Did you guys ever sell your original art, like your original comic pages?
Always.
Oh, yes. How much do you sell yours for?
the comic originals
just
are
a page.
$80 minimum.
Wow.
Of course, there's a lot of variables that go into that, too.
Since mine isn't done on really super fancy like paper, I've been using cardstock, but some of my stuff's computer paper. I was going for about $10 a pop. I was selling them a little bit online, and then it kind of died down. But maybe I'll get back into it again once I'm, you know, back from my basic training thing during the summer.
Well, one of my motivations for starting my webcomic was kind of cynical. I wanted to do comics, but I also kind of noticed that people who did comics, they had a much larger audience for their artwork, because people get invested in like the characters and get invested in the narratives. And I'm like, you know, I can't compete on technique with some of the biggest names in the furry crowd. So maybe I should start a comic. Maybe that'll get me popular. And that sounds terrible, but it really works.
Oh, of course.
And so I'm able to charge more for my art than I was before.
Hmm.
My pages aren't flying off, but there's been a couple of times where like, when I'll finish a story and I'll put all the pages up for sale, and somebody will just swoop in and swipe all, like snag all of them, like the when
now,
I did the Soldier in the Czar.
At conventions, are you a dealer's room artist or are you an artist alley artist? Because I hear
that
you.
At Fanime, I was in the artist alley. Most of my experiences with Further Confusion, which the artist alley is like 8 tables out in the hallway, and so I'm always in the dealer's room there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
so,
your concept
of dealer's room is, and mine are probably a little bit different.
Yeah, I usually just do for anime cons. I just do the artist alley, and I might be going to my first furry convention in the fall. And there's no way I'm going to be able to get a dealer's room, but I'm going to try out the Artist Alley Midwest Fur Fest. But it's going to be...
Oh, I did that one last year.
Oh, how many artists usually try to sign up every day?
Well, the Artist Alley, you're not going to have any... like, because the Midwest Fur Fest Artist Alley is...
different.
It seemed like it was bigger than the dealer's room last I went.
Wow.
I had a deal in the dealer's room, and... I guess they're going to fix it this year, but last year it was like on the underground floor, like where nobody could find it. The person I was sharing a table with, we called it the dealer's dungeon. Like everybody showed up on Sunday and were like, I didn't know that you guys are down here. I didn't even know that there was a separate dealer's room from the artist alley. But every time I went into the artist alley, it seemed like half the tables were empty. So it probably is not worth getting a dealer's room at MFF.
Oh, well, excellent.
For a dealer's table.
Yeah, I think it was like you basically, the artist said, I went to Midwest Fur Fest once, and I think I got a table on the first day. And it's basically you just sign up, and if you get picked to be able to have a table that day, you get a table that day. Because I don't think they charge for them like other conventions.
Nope, they don't.
So it's I forget what they call it, like a lottery. Basically.
The artist alley is definitely like the best option for MFF.
Alrighty. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break once again. And when we come back, we're going to finish up this discussion and go on to some news.
Like
That was Watercolor by Bill, found at musicalley.com by Mevio. I wanted to go back to and talk about, you were talking about scanning and such, and I had to turn on my scanner in order to see this. Let's see here. Whenever I get a scanner, I never use the software that comes with it. I don't even load it.
Of course.
Because typically, because there's two different types of ways that the scanner will work. And with a scanner or even a printer, I think, there'll be an option when you're selecting source to scan from, the WIA, and then it'll say whatever, like mine is an Epson Perfection V200. So I always pick the WIA, and that'll basically say, go with the computer settings or the program settings. It's like the, like if you're scanning through Urban View or through Photoshop, that's what it'll do, and it'll pull up. Here, let me pull up mine. Acquire. I'll typically get, this is on a PC, I don't know how it works on a Mac, but it'll come up, what do you want to scan? And it'll have a preset for color picture, grayscale picture, black and white picture, and then there's the custom settings. I always use the custom settings, and the one thing that you can do is adjust the brightness. And I usually, mine is at negative 30 right now because it's fairly new, so it's very bright. But I'm wondering if your scanners aren't picking up some of your color because your brightness is too high. If you turn down the brightness, maybe it'd pick up more of the color.
Yeah, I think if you mess with the color settings, it really does help. I have an older Epson Perfection, actually, and it has what's called professional mode. It's actually in the software.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I did install it, and it works reasonably well. I don't know. So.
I guess for the most part, I'm just like, as long as it's 300 DPI, I'll open it up right now and see. I think I have it on professional. I'll look through.
Well, then maybe I should load the software that comes with it then.
Yeah, maybe it'll make a difference. You never know.
Of course. I don't know.
I don't have it plugged in.
I should probably try to investigate some more, see what I can do. I'm using the MFC 6490, which is like the big, like the 11x17 scanner printer.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's ooh, but like I'm seeing some of the images that, like, when I do badges or commissions for people and they scan them and send them back to me, their scans look better than mine. So I think that, like, it's a cheap large format scanner, and there's a reason it's cheap. So that might be something to investigate. Also, this might be useful for anybody trying to scan watercolor. There's part of the reason that the color gets washed out is because watercolor paper typically has a bit of a tooth to it, and the pigment settles into like the pits in the paper, and a scanner, if you look at like the cross section of the scanner bar, you would see that there are three different like receptors for the three different like the three different color channels, the RGB color channels, and they're not looking at the paper like straight on. Some of them are angled, and so it might see the pigment settling into, you know, the north end of the pit, but it won't see like south end because the angle is just glancing that, and so you're losing data that way. And the fix that I saw for that was like somebody will scan their watercolor once, sit that scan, rotate it on the scanner bed 90 degrees, and then scan it again and comp those two together. That way they've got the scan going in both directions. And I tried that a couple of times, and I have discovered that I'm way too lazy to do that all the time. So I just kind of live with the imperfection.
Oh, well. you know, Root, as long as I have you on the show, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about one particular comic that you did. I didn't quite understand what was happening, if I may.
Sure.
It's the Rockstar Developer comic. I have no idea what's in that glass or what's on top of that car. What is going on?
Okay. That car was supposed to be a... let me grab the link for...
I mean, I would guess maybe it's supposed to be a Google Maps thing, but I'm not sure.
It is a Google Maps car, yes. Okay, so if you ever look at job postings in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, you will see lots and lots and lots of postings for Rockstar designers and Rockstar developers, and it's kind of become a joke among the startup culture that it is now considered to be really tacky to be advertising for a Rockstar anything, because programmers and designers are not rock stars. And so I was the point of that comic was just to make fun of the whole phrase. So there are three panels in which the guy who is responding to the posting for a Rockstar developer does things that historically rock stars have done, like I think it was Jimi Hendrix might have smashed his guitar on stage. Smashing your guitar on stage is a typically rock star thing to do, so he smashes the keyboard. there, I think it was Ozzy Osbourne, I'm not totally certain, who liked to specify in his contract writer that he wanted in the green room of a concert, you know, before he went out on stage, a brandy snifter filled with brown M&Ms. And that's why the dude was holding what looked like beans in it. Yeah, a couple of people that joke. So it was... there's kind of a funny joke about that. I used to work for a rock star, Mike Nesmith of the Monkees, and he would get really angry when people would use that as an example of like rock stars being ridiculous. He says that the only reason that Ozzy Osbourne, you know, the only reason anybody ever anything's ridiculous in their concert writers was to make sure that they knew that the writer had been read. So if he went into the green room and there wasn't a brandy snifter full of brown M&Ms, then he would also know that the acoustics would be fucked up because they hadn't paid any attention to like the sound settings that they wanted. There might be electrical issues, and he couldn't be confident that the concert would go off the way it's supposed to because there was no brandy snifter full of brown M&Ms. But people just kind of anyway. And the last one was Keith Moon of, I think The Who, I don't remember, Keith Moon. His head was in a jar in Akewood. One strip of a Rolls Royce into a pool. So they're just things that rock stars have done in that comic. But
in this case, it's a pool. I see. I thought it was just a flying car.
No, there's a diving board there. There it means pool. Okay, well, thanks for explaining your comic to me.
Poor information design on my part.
I gotta say, though, I'm actually a graphic designer in real life, and you see so many of these ads. Like, I'm from, like, the middle of nowhere in New York, and we get them, too. So it's kind of funny that, you know, you're pointing this out, because it's terrible. It's so stupid when people say that. But.
Oh, well. Well, Let's see here. I'm not sure if we've been having the chat go for a while, though. It seemed to have crashed on me, so I don't see anything. If there's any questions that people had in there for a while, I apologize. When I run this show for so long, the Ustream seems to go... But we do have at least a couple of bits of news. Let's see here. Well, I got to get this in post because trying to find a description for it is a bit difficult because of the type of comic it is. But this episode of the Webcomic Beacon is sponsored by the Rampage Network, which is bringing you Astray 3 at astray3.com. That's the letter 3. And I'm still working on... I asked them if they had a description for the comic, and he said, of all the things to ask for. And so I'm going to see if I can try to come up with a description and plug it in post. But it's just fantastic art. So you guys can check it out. I can't even begin to describe it properly just live on the fly like this, but it's really cool, and you should probably check it out at astray3.com. There's also a milestone this week. Well, actually, a couple of weeks ago. A little late on getting to it, but the 10th anniversary of Flying Glory and the Hounds of Glory. All right, flying-glory.com. So congratulations on your 10-year milestone. And let's see here. And of course, we are now at the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. If you are listening at webcomicbeacon.com, get off of that site, because in a few weeks, the old site is going to be gone. I got to see if I can wrangle some proper redirects to not break the old links, but we'll see. Pick up the new RSS feed at webcastbeacon.com. You can get one just for the Webcomic Beacon, or the individual shows, or just get the master feed link, which you can keep track of all of these shows, including the Tropecast and Web Fiction World, the brand new podcast. And I think next week I'll have episode 2 of Web Fiction World out, so you guys can check that out as well. Still an unknown schedule for the Tropecast and Web Fiction World, but of course we're looking to have at least 2 podcasts a week on the Webcast Beacon Network. And of course, you can find advertising information for individual episodes or the website at webcastbeacon.com/advertise. We have an introductory offer for $10 per episode, which includes 2 mentions on the show, as well as a traditional banner link that stays with the post. So that's a pretty good deal for people out there who are interested in promoting their work. So anyway, if you look at the shows page, well, the whole website has been designed by Michael Sisk, who had created the Webcomic Inkblot theme and plugin for WordPress for webcomics. So I thank him for that. The new Becky art has been drawn by Diana Nock of the Intrepid Girl Bot. And you can also, if you go into our shows, you can also find the Google Calendar, which will try to show you which shows we have coming up when. And as soon as we know what they are, we put them up there, so you can take a look at that. And of course, we are still planning to broadcast live on Sundays, and typically at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the newscast will roll, and at 12 noon, the Webcomic Beacon or the Tropecast will typically go on. Tropecast is usually the second Sunday of the month, but next month I think we're going to be having it on July 3rd. And if all goes to plan, it'll be Tropecast is Magic, a look at My Little Pony tropes. So that should be a very fun episode. And hope to see you there, of course. Let's see here. I don't think there's any more bits of news to go over, and we don't have any questions from the chat room. Before we finish this show up, is there anything else about watercoloring that maybe a newcomer should know?
Well, if I had to say something about it, I would say, you know, what I hear from a lot of other artists, why they avoid doing things in real media, is you can't go back and fix your mistakes. Well, I mean, you can. You have Photoshop. So there's that. You know, there's no excuse there. And part of it is the fun of just messing around and, you know, coming up with something totally different than what you would otherwise. So, you know, don't be afraid of screwing stuff up. You can always fix it or, you know, go with it. You know, whatever you want to do.
I think bad watercoloring looks a lot better than bad Photoshop or paint skills. So, for beginners, you know, if you want to learn how to color things, it'd be good to maybe practice with watercolor firsthand.
Put down newspaper.
I think
first.
That there's been a really interesting like shift toward like natural media in webcomics, because like the Egypt from however many X thousand miles away that Sarah Glidden, I think it was Sarah Glidden, it might have been, I don't remember who did it now, one of the Pizza Island ladies. Like that was all done in watercolor, and I'm noticing I'm noticing more people like picking it up, and it's really, really cool to see.
I was going to say, conversely, there is a digital program out there that is fairly, very, fairly intuitive when it comes to mimicking physical media, especially watercolor, and that's ArtRage. Did want to mention that.
Yeah.
That's a neat one.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cheap.
But another thing, too, to note is you won't be able to sell your original art.
Uh-huh, yep.
You can sell prints, though.
Well, yeah.
Original art goes for more.
Having an original set to sell is really, really like handy to me.
Yeah, there's certainly that. Of course.
I was gonna say.
Go ahead.
To answer your question, the paper that you use probably makes the most like impact on how your watercolors look. And so if you're just like starting out, like go and buy a sampler, or just like go down to your art store and buy like a single sheet of everything on the watercolor paper rack and find out what you like the best. You know, because some people like working on like plate Bristol, and some people like working on something with a real heavy tooth, like some just rough like Arches watercolor paper. I really like the Strathmore Gemini line, which is like the most expensive. Like the best stuff that I've done has been on that paper, because I think it's just because the paper makes the paint so workable. I can kind of move it around after I've laid the pigment down. But I can't print on it, so I don't use it anymore.
All right.
So yeah, use good paper and treat it like it's cheap paper. Otherwise you won't get anything done.
I use cheap paper and treat it like it's good paper. It works for me. I don't know.
Yep, me too.
Okay, we do have a question from the chat room now that it's refreshed for me. The question is from Remke, who asks, what about watercolors made for the web but converted to print, i.e. for selling comics? Have any of you tried that? I'm not entirely sure what they're asking, unless they're looking at if you scan in RGB and then try to convert it to CMYK. Or printing your comic, I guess, in general.
Lots of comic books are like done in watercolor. Black Sad is all watercolor, and it sells gangbusters.
Yeah. Well, one thing too. This is, I guess, with printing too. When you print off your colored books, printing colored, comics in general is very expensive. I have sold more Planet Close to Heaven books in black and white than Demon Eater, even though Demon Eater is probably like 3-4 times more popular than Planet. I just can't really seem to sell the books just because, they are in color, and, selling $20 a book, is a lot harder than selling a book for $10.
Right. And with the conversion, obviously, when you scan, you're going to get an RGB. Unless there's a way to scan in CMYK, I've not seen that yet. So there's going to be some conversion in there, and you're at the mercy of whatever program you use to do the RGB to CMYK conversion. And I have very little experience in that, so I can't say much about that. Jill, I know you went through, I think, Lulu for Demon Eater. Did you have to convert your RGB files into CMYK for them, or did they just take your RGB?
You know what's hilarious? They were all, I think for a time, they were all specific. You have to have it this kind of thing. And I just submitted the whole, you know, giant PDF thing as the RGB, and they accepted it anyway. You know, they just said it might be printed kind of bad colors.
Right.
And the thing is with Demon Eater, it's an alien world. I don't really care as much that the colors are a bit off because I don't really have any flesh tone,
right.
You know, characters. So it's not – I can get away with more
right.
if the colors are a bit off.
And when you're going to have troubles converting RGB to CMYK with – really bright reds, fuchsia, and bright greens. Just it's you can convert CMYK to RGB with almost no loss of intended color. But when you go from RGB to CMYK, you're gonna get some things that are not gonna look right. But of course, when you have physical media that's in color, you're limited, you're at the mercy of the conversion program to that versus going back into your RGB on your digital file and making a different RGB selection for that, of course. What about you, Root? Have you ever printed some of your stuff and noticed a difference? Or do you convert first, or...
I haven't printed any books, so I haven't really had to deal with the CMYK conversion process. I do sell individual prints of my comic.
Mm-hmm.
The printer that we use, though, is this gigantic like hexachrome inkjet printer that prints in RGB. It takes RGB files, and so there's no loss of quality. The only loss of quality is because my scanner is garbage.
But you can't actually print in RGB. It's impossible. It has to. Well,
what do you mean?
Well, RGB is light. You can't.
There are two methods.
Oh,
one's
right.
for viewing
what,
on screen, and one's not.
Yeah, I mean, you can't
well,
have
it doesn't choke on RGB format files. I don't know. I don't really know much about printers, but I do know that the thing has like 8 different inks in it, and so it has like cyan and cyan light and yellow and yellow dark.
Oh, that's CMYK then.
Magenta.
No, but you said
yeah,
it has
it's,
8.
It's a variation of CMYK.
Okay, so yeah, that's a multi-ink printer. That's a lot different than your traditional printers, which are going to have just the CMY and black.
It has a much wider gamut than the CMYK process.
Okay. No, is this a home printer or is this a local printer?
It's a commercial printer. It's about the size of a coffin.
Wow. Well, I suppose that is an option as well. Of course, it's going to be.
It's
I'm
not
sure
my
that's,
printer. It's but it's there's a fellow that does a lot of printing for the furry crowd. His name is Tor or Tugrik, as he is called inside the furry community, and he does printing for rates for fandom folks for much less than what you would pay for a much higher quality and much more options than you would get for a commercial printer.
Very cool.
And if anybody is interested in contacting this fellow to get sweet deals, I'm happy to send you his way.
Would you be fine with us putting the link in the show, or would you rather this people contact you? Or
I don't think he has he doesn't really have a web page or a link set up. But if you want to, just drop me a note. If go to donchappell.com and there's a contact link at the top.
Okay.
Just say. You'd like a referral, and I can give you a referral.
Oh, if I could jump in, sorry, I was just didn't want to cut you off. regarding print too, I think it helps if you can plan, you know that you're going to print someday, you know, from the start. If you can prepare your files and keep them in a format, you know, where in a high resolution format and adjust the colors the way you're going to want them. If you know the specs for the printer you're going to be printing on, it'll help to keep a copy around. You know, even if it's like a someday thing, you know, keep high resolution files, keep originals, all that stuff. It will help you later on if you're ever planning to print.
Yeah. Draw it once and sell it three times.
No, awesome. Well, there's a lot of great information for the show for people wanting to get into or looking or curious about watercoloring. And if you are a little bit interested in like the digital format, you could probably go back into our archives and find out the one where we had Megan Rose Gedris on the show talking about Art Rage a bit. But of course, we like to get our hands dirty here, so. Ah, so many Skype messages. get your hands dirty. Be sure newspaper are not going away because we are still going to need them to put over our tables so that we can make messy paint arts with it. So, but okay, I expected more of a chuckle for that. But where are my slackies, Mark and Tanya? They're not here today to laugh at my jokes. No, I'm just kidding. They don't laugh at my jokes. Anyway, this we are pretty much at the. I am dying.
I was distracted. Here. Can you repeat the joke?
No, that's you can't repeat a joke.
Please, I'll laugh.
I was saying newspapers aren't going out of business because we still need them to put on the table for when we make our messy art.
That's right.
How am I going to carve a pumpkin if I don't have the New York Post?
All right. So there is, there was one thing we mentioned on the Webcomic Beacon newscast. I don't know, maybe a month or two ago where we had gotten an email from something called Scribble. And Ross Scott got the email, and we basically all wrote it off because of how unprofessional it sounded like. But Root actually had said yes, and has been using it on his site for a while. So, do you want to give us an update on what Scribble is?
Yeah, they did not contact me. I am way too low profile for them. I learned about them because Immelman, the guy that did. What did he do before he did Ballerina Mafia? The Concession, which is a comic, web comic of some infamy. I looked at Ballerina Mafia, and he had a bunch of these files with the thing that said powered by Scribble, and I looked at it and I was like, this is interesting. And so I asked him how it was working out for him, and he said that like they were one of his top referrers. And that they emailed him, and he originally like did the same thing. He deleted the email, and then he got, because he thought it was like spam or whatever, a scam or something. And then he got another one that was clearly written by a human being, and he was like, "All right, I'll try it." And so I tried it, and I'm looking at my referring sites for the last month for the Don Chapel and my Google Analytics, and right now it is my third largest referrer. And I actually, I after signing up with Scribble, like I investigated it, and it looks like there's this whole school of they're called traffic exchanges, where you agree to put their widget on your website, and it links for like content that their algorithm determines would be appropriate for your readership. In exchange, they scrape your site and put your thumbnails for your articles on the other websites in their content network. And the profit model for this is, of course, it doesn't take you directly to the site that you're referring to. It takes you to a landing page on that service. So if you click on any of the Scribble links, it takes you to the Scribble landing page, and then you have to click again to get to you know, whatever it is you clicked for in the first place, and they get their advertising revenue that way. Scribble is...
So it's basically just referrals.
It's very like lo-fi. It's like two dudes in Britain who thought that, you know, they're just, you know, college kids doing a programming experiment after, you know, being familiar with the other traffic exchangers, thought they would do the same thing. It's kind of like the cheesy art of traffic exchangers.
Okay.
one thing that Scribble does, like I tried Scribble and I tried Wahoha and I tried Awesomer. Awesomer is terrible because it just puts breasts all over your website and it's just, it's gross. And I just breasts everywhere. And I thought that that was a very callous and cynical way to fluff your numbers. So I dropped them because I don't hate my readership that much. But I left Wahoha on. Wahoha is still kind of gross, but not to the same extent that the other exchangers are. They don't have like the pop unders and
right.
But Wahoha is like my largest. Like it they send more trick my way. In the last 30 days, they sent me 991 hits with an average of 3.5 pages a visit, which is pretty good. It's better than StumbleUpon. Like as far as pages per visit, but like StumbleUpon is still like, you know, 6,000 referrals.
Right.
Scribble is the next one down with 663 for the last 30 days. But because the way that their site is structured, Scribble, the reason that they sent out emails to webcomics creators is because they have a specific webcomics category in their algorithm. So the thumbnails that appear on your website are going to be for other webcomics, and your thumbnails will appear on the sites of other webcomics. So you're getting people that are interested in reading comics.
Hmm.
So they're a few hundred hits behind Wahoha, but the pages per visit, it's 6.81 is the average for the last 30 days. So there's a greater percentage of clicking through and actually kind of reading through my archive and converting into fans. So I think, you know, it's a pretty good deal. It's maybe not as good a deal as, you know, buying Project Wonderful ads or whatever, or, you know, dropping your link on Reddit, encouraging your fans to stumble your comics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, for a comic that, you know, with as modest a readership of mine, it works out really well. So I'm really pleased with them.
I might actually have to check them out then. Can you just go to the site and sign up?
I talked over the top of you while I was giving my spiel. I'm sorry if you had questions. I'm happy to answer them.
It's basically just referrals, right? It's not an ad thing. Okay. And you can go to the site and just sign up for it, or do you need an invite?
You need to send them, like, there's an application process. It took them like a day or two to respond to my application.
Okay.
And I think I had to wait like 2 weeks before my stuff went live. It if you're really impatient, that might be a bother. the one thing I really don't like about Scribble though is there is no control panel for submitting your comments. They just kind of let their algorithm scrape your site and determine, like, it generates the thumbnails automatically. Whereas Wahoha, you have to go in and submit specific articles and generate your own thumbnails, which I really prefer because I feel like as a human being, I can create much more interesting thumbnails and bylines than a computer program can. And I understand from my email conversations with the Scribble guys that they're planning on getting that functionality in there.
Cool. But,
you know, because it's just the two of them and their site has kind of mushroomed so quickly, I imagine they're priorities are dealing with problems of scale rather than their user interface.
Right, right.
Jill's got to go. Bye, Jillie.
All right. Well, Jill, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Yep, you're welcome.
And good luck with the whole Navy thing. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. If those that don't know, I'm going to be gone for the whole summer. But don't worry, I buffered Demeter. That's a good thing about watercolor. You can do so much, so many pages, very fast work. Much better, much faster than Photoshop, I think. All right. Well, goodbye.
All right. Thanks again. Bye, Jilly. Demeter.com. See you later, Jill. Oh, there she goes. There she goes again. No, wait, that's bad. Anyway, all right. Well, we got, once again, more information than I remembered to put on the show, and I'm definitely going to check out Scribble and see what we can do. Otherwise, I think we're pretty much good for the rest of the show here, unless anyone else has anything else to add, once again. Well, awesome.
Not too much.
So again, we have Bug Bite.
Thank you for the invitation to be on your show. This is exciting. I feel legit. I'm on a podcast.
Sweet.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was really cool.
Absolutely. And thanks for being on, of course. And we've had Bugbait from Messenger at messenger-comic.com and Root from the Dawn Chapel at dawnchapel.com. There we go. And of course, I've been...
Just Google for Firefox has crashed. I'm the number one hit on Google for that. I win.
You win. Of course, I have been Festworks of PSIWebcomic.com, and of course, I lose. And this, of course, has been the Webcomic Beacon at webcastbeacon.com.